This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to the Daily Digest. I'm Sumitra Selvarajan. I'm joined by Lim Soo and N.T. Shao Ik. Earlier in our first story, we looked at whether the internet should be a basic human right. Mm-hmm. And now when we're moving on to our second story, and that's going to be all about the Turner Prize, because earlier this year, Lawrence Abu Hamdan, Helen Kamak, Oscar Murillo and Tai Shani were shortlisted for the Turner Prize, which happens to be one of the world's best known visual arts awards. Mm-hmm. And the 35-year-old prize is named for a British painter, J.M.W. Turner. And it's actually awarded every year to a British visual artist working in Britain and who's under the age of 50. Although I do remember a couple of years ago, 2017, if I'm not mistaken, they removed that requirement for age for that year.
Right.
So what happens is every year, four shortlisted...
The age requirement seems discriminatory, but okay, moving on.
We want to promote young people's art. I'm okay with that. So every year, four shortlisted artists showcase their work in one exhibition. And what happens is, it's usually at the Tate Britain, but having said that, the exhibition has been held in other cities before. Mm-hmm. This year, it was held in the seaside town of Margate, and it was held there for very, very good reason too.
And that reason is because one of the shortlisted artists, Oscar Murillo, installed papier-mâché worker figures on pews looking out at a gorgeous sea view, but obscured by a black curtain. So looking at the other shortlisted artists, Helen Kamak presented a 99-minute documentary film examining the overlooked role of women in the Northern Irish civil rights struggle. Lawrence Abu Hamdan made works that stemmed from an investigation he undertook with Amnesty International and Forensic Architecture into the Syrian regime's torture prison of Said Naya. And finally, Tai Shani created a surreal fantasy installation that represents a city built by women in a post-patriarchal world.
Wait, hold up here. These are all art?
Yes, it's art. And it's a completely valid question. Right? Because this is the exact same question most people ask every year the shortlist is announced. And this is what the Turner Prize does on a regular basis, you know? And it's very hard. It's art that's meant to make you think. It can shock and it can titillate and it can surprise and it can anger and can throw you off balance, which is what happened when I went to see Damien Hirst's shark stuffed and floating in formaldehyde. That was one of the exhibits many, many years ago.
Yeah, abstract art. Anyway, what happened with this year's shortlist is that the four candidates met when their work was shown to the public and started discussing the possibility of nominating themselves as a collective for the final prize judging. So they felt that the themes explored in their individual submissions had common threads of power, agency, exclusion and oppression. And therefore, if one person won and the others didn't, it would have seemed like they were letting the others' cause down.
Okay, well, I can sort of see how even if their medium styles and even themes were different, they felt that as a collective, they represented a voice of the other. So perhaps a voice that they felt wasn't heard loudly enough or wasn't heard often enough. So their art as a collective represented solidarity.
And that's exactly what their joint statement said when they eventually won. They said that pitting themselves against each other, and I'm going to quote them here, would undermine our individual artistic efforts to show a world entangled. The issues we each deal with are as inseparable as climate chaos is from capitalism.
And it was the symbolism of the act of presenting themselves as a collective that mattered most to them. And remember that there was a possibility that the judges would not accept their proposal for a shared prize. And when they submitted the idea to the judging committee back in June, they had no idea what the outcome would be. It was only at the award ceremony a couple of nights ago that the news was announced that the artists would split the prize money.
But could the judges have actually rejected that proposal, though? Because when you when they made such a strong statement about solidarity, the strength of common shared experiences, it's hard to see how the judges really had a choice in the matter without them coming out as mean or oppressors themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this isn't like 2016 when Turner Prize winner Helen Martin shared her prize money with all the other nominees. Here, the judges are asked to either accept or reject a submission based on a strong political statement.
So the new news got me thinking about the judging process for creative endeavors, right? And the two that I'm most familiar with are for art and for literature. Mm-hmm. How do you pick a winner for such a subjective field?
That's right.
Is a question I've always grappled with. What makes one piece of art better than the other? Mm. What makes one piece of writing better than the other? Yeah. When I read shortlists like the Commonwealth Prize, for example, mm-hmm. The five winners, regional winners, that those stories are shared after the main winner has been announced. And I read each one of the regional winners and I often sit back and I think, how did the judges pick one out of this? They're all brilliant.
Yeah, that's right.
So what I did was I reached out to Bettina Chua Abdullah, who is the organizer of the Feku Award for Food and Drink Writing, which is now in its third year, to find out her thoughts on really the judging process and how easy or difficult it is when it comes to picking a winner.
The Feku Award has, in its 3 years, changed the judging, and that is always going to evolve. Some of your listeners know the backstory of how this award came to be. In the first year, I really had no idea what we would get in terms of entries. So we started out with one prize, because that's what an award's supposed to be, right?
Mm.
But after the first year, when almost every entry we received was a personal narrative of what people ate, who they ate with, when they did, what it meant to them, I felt that as an award that was aiming to grow and develop food writing, that we needed to guide and encourage writers to explore more journalistic food writing.
Mm.
So we added the category in the second year, and that meant we had two awards. And the same thing happened for this year. We added creative nonfiction as a third category, because what I wanted to do was reach out to the community of graphic storytellers.
Mm.
But I also did know that if we didn't have enough entries in all the categories to present the awards fairly, we would then select three from the shortlist to present the award to, regardless of the category. And this is the discretion that judges and award managers need to have. There are judges and award managers who have chosen not to give out an award because they don't feel that the entries merit giving out an award.
Mm. Okay, so fair enough. But when a prize like the Turner Prize or more recently, like when the Booker Prize is announced, there is an expectation of a single winner, the recognition of one piece of literature or art that stands above all else. And when the award is then not given to a sole winner, but rather a duo or a group of winners, what does that, for you, say about the meaning behind the award?
Okay, let's take the Turner. The four Turner artists, what they did was express a need for commonality and unity. It's a very specific situation. What they were saying, as I understand it, is that they wanted all four of their messages, all four of their politics to be given equal importance. And the judges concurred with the artist that in this instance, choosing one winner would imply that one message, one cause, was more important than the other.
Mm.
So what I think happened here is the artists themselves decided that their messages were bigger than winning.
Mm.
And in a way, their messages almost transcended the art. So did the Turner 2019 become an award about messages and causes and not about the art? I mean, that's for an individual to decide.
Mm.
Certainly the response from the media, what you read, is very mixed. In the case of the Booker, it was not so transparent, really, how the decision was made. In the case of the Turner, it's very clear that this is what the artists, the potential recipients of the award, wanted. In the case of the Booker, I remember reading one comment from a judge saying that they had wanted to reward both the career of Margaret Atwood
mm-hmm.
and the consistency of the other winner,
Bernardine Evaristo.
Yeah, which raised then hackles that the award is supposed to be about the work, not about the career of the writer. So it just goes back to what I was saying in the beginning. When it comes to judging for literary or visual arts, it's deeply, deeply subjective. I think there is a merit in providing opportunities for readers or lovers of art to compare, to critique, to evaluate a shortlist and decide whether they agree with judges' choices and to explore why they do agree or why they don't. We have just released Telltale Foods, which is going to be in major bookstores by the end of this month. Now, this is an anthology of food writing, which was selected from the submissions made to the FAKU Award over the past 3 years. And people are going to read this, and some people are going to say, you know what, I would have chosen a different winner. And for me, that's good. For me, that's great. One of the skills this sort of conversation builds is critical literacy. Can you analyze? Can you evaluate? Can you critique? Do you understand the social, the economic, the cultural implications of what you're reading?
So that was Bettina Chua Abdullah, organizer and judge of the FAKU Award for Food and Drink Writing. And I love Bettina's final statement, right? That the whole point of these awards really is to be able to provide the public with an avenue for critical thinking. Mm-hmm. Whether or not you agree with the judges is already a jump-starting point for conversation.
Mm. So in a way, I don't agree with them awarding the prize to this person, but I'm going to read the rest.
Yes.
Yeah. So from there, you open up your horizons and you're given this opportunity to read everything else. And you don't have to. I mean, I suppose, there are many situations where you'd be like, what were the judges thinking?
It happened very recently, two Booker Prizes ago. I'm quite sure I was quite confounded by the decision of the judges.
It's about discourse.
Yes.
Yeah. And I read in a news article as well that Alex Farquharson, who's the director of Tate Britain, mm-hmm. which you mentioned earlier, is in charge of awarding the prize. So Alex said that the artists had given judges a lot to think about, and their statement said, and I'm quoting here, "We are honoured to be supporting this bold statement of solidarity and collaboration in these divided times. Their symbolic act reflects the political and societal social poetics that we admire and value in their work."
I also think he didn't have a choice in the matter.
So, you know, that what makes me uncomfortable is not their message, is not their solidarity, but is the collusion and the sort of imposition of force almost.
I know. I know exactly what you mean by that. And it's been the one thing that's been kind of sitting a little bit uneasy with me. When you give the judges such a strong political statement saying that we are banding together because we feel that our art is representative of a wide variety of oppressions that is being inflicted upon the human race, are you willing to award it a collective prize? Mm. How can you say no to that?
Yes.
How can you possibly say no to that without being seen as some meanie?
Mm. And also, coming back again, and you had already briefly mentioned it earlier, Suen, that, you know, really, if you want to if you wanted to present this united message and this united front, you should have submitted your art as a collective and put yourself up then against other artists.
Not after you've been shortlisted.
So I'm not entirely sure of how that works. I do recall reading that apparently none of these artists who had been shortlisted had ever met each other or known, maybe, I'm sure they knew of each other, but they never ever met prior to meeting for the first time when all of their exhibits were in the shortlist. So perhaps there would not have been, how would you know if you don't know an artist personally, how would you know what they're working on, I suppose?
Fair enough.
Yeah. So what do you think? Do you think that there should be, that the whole point of arts, and I'm going to stick to arts and literature because it's what I know best, should that be one winner?
Yes. No. I mean, at the end of the day, right, if you want to give an award, if it's a competition of sorts, there should be a win. I mean, it's what comes along with an award or competition, because if you want to have multiple winners, then I feel that the award or the prize loses its meaning.
But Shai, you see this all the time with kids these days, right? There is a propensity to everybody is a winner.
Mm. So you start awarding for being present.
Yes.
you create more and more categories. Mm. So instead of just one excellent student award, yeah, you have best in presentation, best in art. So yeah, in order to be able to award more. And so, I mean, actually, I'm in two minds about this. Mm. On the one hand, I feel it is very important to acknowledge and to, reward all kinds of achievements, mm-hmm, because there's not just one definition of what's excellent or what's a good achievement. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, rules of a competition are there for a reason. So it comes back for me to the arm twisting, or what I perceive to be arm twisting. I wasn't in the room and this kind of discussion took place, but was there arm twisting? And does that then set a precedent, mm-hmm, for other prizes and awards to arbitrarily change their rules? And when does that take us down a slippery slope? Mm. Right?
So I do remember reading an article where the chief judge did say it was one of the easiest, if not the easiest, deliberation that they
had ever.
And it was a unanimous decision between all of the judges. And I suppose they would have to say that as well. But I wonder what that says about future Turner Prizes. I mean, mm-hmm, the judges said, oh, we don't see this happening again. But what if next year a collective of artists get together and decide that, you know, we want to do a themed, mm-hmm, submission?
And also, what if, say, for example, if you have five artists shortlisted, right, but one of them has a theme that's completely different from the others, is, mm-hmm, it going to be then the four of them as a collective versus the one? Is that going to put some of them at a disadvantage and some at
that's
an advantage?
That's right, weighted unfairly. Mm. Yeah. And I disagree with the premise that if you choose one artist over the others, you are favouring their message over the others.
Correct.
I disagree because all their messages are equally strong and important.
Right.
And again, if audiences and viewers have the conversations and discourse that they're supposed to have, they will be able to see all the messages well, I'm being optimistic. But.
And I think the right way to lead into the weekend is with a bit of optimism anyway. That is all the time that we have for today's show. Do look us up on Facebook. We're BFM, The Bigger Picture. Drop us a message. Let us know if you enjoyed the show or if you have any topics that you'd like for us to discuss next week. That's right. No more shows for this week. We will see you next week for a brand new Daily Digest. If you missed any part of this show, you can download the podcasts, bfm.my/The Daily Digest or via the BFM app or via Spotify. So this has been The Daily Digest on BFM 89.9. Have a wonderful weekend ahead, everybody. We're going to be leaving you with Art Is Hard by Cursive.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.